Hello, I'm Felicia Vereen, always known as Fee.
Hey, Fee, and I'm your girl, Sharita Three, better known as Fred.
And we are Inspire Her, the Total Woman podcast, all about uplifting you.
Yes.
Because friends, face it, you are awesome.
We'll be chatting up about topics we love to talk about, all the things we as women must juggle every day and the issues we complain about.
We'll chat about the struggle, the job, and about him. Mm. You know who we're talking about.
Girl.
That boo, husband, boyfriend, ex, whatever you're calling them today.
Mm.
Our lovely hellions, kids.
Our angels. But seriously, friends, life happens, and we don't always get a chance to talk about it. We take it on the chin, and we keep it moving.
Because that's what we were told to do.
Yep.
But here on Inspire Her, the Total Woman podcast with Red and Fee, we are the friends you love to hang out with. We are here to inspire her, the Total Woman.
Yes.
Hey, hey, Red.
Hey, Fee. How are you?
Girl, I'm making it. I am making it. I appreciate, first of all, I would like to say on the last episode, we dedicated it to my aunt, and she has since passed away, and we laid her to rest today. And man, I can tell you one thing for sure. When people have a beautiful spirit and they just love on everybody that comes their way, you can see it when they go home to their glory. Oh my gosh. These people packed this church. People had stand up, stand outside. And in the country, people pull off the road when the funeral comes by. Well, they had to stand off that road for a long time
because wow.
The line was long. But wow. Everybody loved her. And she was everybody's aunt. She was everybody's sister. Everybody's mama, everybody's best friend.
Mm.
So I just want to say to my Aunt Cheryl, you had a life well lived.
And wow.
I appreciate everybody's thoughts, everybody's texts, emails. It was a hard day, but it was also a beautiful day. So
yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know that was tough on you, but you pulled through and you have lots of memories.
I sure do. And I'm excited. I had to make sure I got home so I could do this interview because I'm super excited. We have a director with us, and I just want to let me put this title on here because we are interviewing an influential Black female director. I had to put all of that on there.
Yeah.
I had to put all of that on there because Miss Deborah Riley Draper is just that. She is a award-winning and critically acclaimed filmmaker. Welcome, Miss Riley.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to a really compelling conversation and one that will inspire her. So, yay.
I love that play on words. Yes.
I'm a writer.
Now, I'm going to read this bio, guys. It's awesome. So bear with me for a minute because I need to read this. Deborah Riley Draper is an award-winning and critically acclaimed filmmaker and advertising agency veteran. Variety magazine has previously named Ms. Draper as one of the top 10 docu-makers to watch. Her incredible storytelling and ability to find unseen and unheard voices is changing the independent film landscape. Deborah will premiere her much anticipated project, James Brown, Say It Loud, on February 19th, 2024, which it is out on A&E Network right now. She directed it and co-wrote it. It's a four-part series, and she is the executive who produced the legendary art. Let me back up. It's a four-part series. It's executive produced by legendary artists Mick Jagger and Academy Award winning Amir Questionlove Thompson.
Wow.
I couldn't mess that one up. I had to go back and read it.
Questionlove, come on.
Yes.
Really? Wow. The docuseries examines Brown's legacy through exclusive interviews, never before seen footage, and his beloved music catalog. Man, The catalog
is everything.
Draper previously directed the two-part series, The Legacy of Black Wall Street, for OWN Discovery, and I did not know that
because
which received the NAACP Image Award nomination for Outstanding Breakthrough Creative Television. In 2017, she received the NAACP Image Award nomination for her documentary feature, Olympic Pride, American Prejudice, which she also directed, produced, and wrote, telling the untold story of the 18 African-Americans who defied Hitler and Jim Crow in 1936. And I also saw that as well. And I'm like, I'm just amazed that I am talking to the person who created
this. Yes.
The film was one of only three films recognized globally by HRH Prince Albert of Monaco for 2017 Sportel World Peace and Sport Award.
His Royal Highness.
Royal Highness.
Yes.
Look, let me finish. We heard nothing yet. The debut film, say the word, Versailles
73.
73, American Runway Revolution opened New York Fashion Week and Toronto Fashion Week in 2012, then debuted on Logo TV. Versailles 73 is the first intimate look at the infamous Palace of Versailles fundraiser, which gave birth to American Prêt-à-Porter led by Black models. The film won the HBO Best Documentary at the MVAAFF. Draper also directed the award-winning documentary 20 Pearls, the story of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated.
Wow.
One. And short documentary On Board, the story of Black women on boards, which premiered at the 2023 Tribeca Festival. Draper recently wrote and directed the 2024 Love Your Mind campaign for the Ad Council. Additionally, she won the 2023 Gold Anthem Award and Gold Addy Award for the Ads Council's World Stories in 2021 and multiple Addies and Anthem Awards for the Ad Council's COVID-19 Education PSA Tuskegee Legacy Stories. Draper served as the archival producer on Hulu's Look At Me Now extension in 2022. She wrote and directed the award-winning short film Illegal Rose in 2019, starring Emmy Award-winning actress Jasmine Guy.
Wow.
As the producer of the web series The Table, set to release in February 2023, she serves as director and executive producer on the upcoming docuseries Flipped in association with Coffee Bluff Pictures and Whip Studios. Draper's leadership in advertising includes campaigns and projects for Lamborghini, Coca-Cola Classic, which is my favorite, ExxonMobil, HP, AT&T, FedEx, and the Georgia Lottery Corporation. She has earned two regional Emmys, a Gold Effie, and several Addy Awards. Draper, a diehard FSU alumnus, resides in Atlanta and is a member of Film Fatex.
Wow.
We appreciate you coming to interview with us.
Of course.
All of that because a lot of times we'll get bios and we chop it up. I wanted to give you all of your roses because you have done so much and so much for the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I appreciate you and I appreciate you and all the work that you have done.
So yes. Is that an Emmy behind you?
Welcome, welcome. There you go. You see it.
She read about it.
Yes.
She read about it.
My first time seeing one up close.
Reading about it and actually seeing it is two different things.
There it is, y'all. There it is.
Oh, dang.
thank you for being here with
us.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to pop on a Sunday evening so we can chit chat.
Yes, that is amazing. So the James Brown documentary, Say It Loud. What made you think about creating that?
Well, you know, the way it worked, Questlove and Mick Jagger had the project already set up, right? And so they decided they would look for directors, and my agent called and they said, do you want to go out, you know, to interview for this project? And I was like, what's the project about? Because I'm very specific about the things I want to work on. And they were like, James Brown. And I was like, okay,
right,
I'm here for it. So I put a treatment together and I presented it and I pitched for the role. And about 4 weeks later, after I pitched, I received a call that I was the director for the docuseries, which would be on A&E. There would be 4 episodes and I would get to write and direct it and kind of create the vision for how we wanted to tell this story. And I was really honored to be able to unpack the story of a Black man who lived such a large life and whose life was so impactful and influential and whose music my parents just couldn't get enough of.
Right.
So I approached it from that standpoint. I approached it much different. There've been a lot of documentaries and biopics. Chadwick was in one of them about James Brown, but as a Black woman who was born and raised in the South, born and raised in Georgia, I thought I could bring a very specific lens to the story and look at his life in a different way and different from the storytellers who had done it before. And that's what I set out to do. The kind of thesis that I was working with was this idea that I saw in a magazine cover from 1969 that said, was James Brown the most important Black man? And I was like, that's a provocative question. I think I want to unpack that.
Yes.
And so there it began.
Wow.
Well, how did you decide on the specific aspects of James Brown's life and his career? Like, what to put in the docuseries?
That's a great question. I wanted to do it from the day he was born, which he was born dead, until the day that he died. Because when you look at his life, there's this idea of the origin story. Like, who is this cat, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where was he from? Who were his people? What happened to him to give him enough confidence to later become James Brown?
Yeah.
So I wanted to learn his origin story, the who, what, and when of what his childhood looked like, what went into the molding, the nurturing, or the not nurturing of James Brown. Then I wanted to look at that rise to stardom and that and how he maintained it and how he invented funk and had all these number one songs back to back. Then I wanted to look at what happened when music started to change and people were listening to other types of music. And then lastly, how he became this global icon around the world and ultimately passing away and still leaving a legacy of 15,000 samples of his music and being the foundation of hip hop. So that's kind of how I broke the series up, so that we can begin to understand who he was, what he contributed. Think about it. He was born during the Depression, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the way to 2006. So looking
at that,
right?
With a seventh grade education.
With a seventh grade education. So looking at his life against the backdrop of America, specifically Black America, was what I wanted to do, because he had this incredible sense of Blackness that was infused into all of his choices and his decisions and how he moved and how he navigated.
Right. And did you discover like the ups and the downs of him?
He's human.
Right.
So from birth to death, there are ups, there are downs, there are joys, there's triumphs, there's pain. We are Black people. So there is always trauma.
Right.
People say trauma, but it's trauma because of being Black in this country in and of itself is traumatic. Because the way systemically and structurally we have been oppressed. So to be able to break through that and soar requires so much tenacity and resilience. And it's such a great story and it's such a great lesson for all of us. So you fall, you get back up. You have troubles, you try to resolve them. You know, he is a great, his life is a teaching. It's an incredible lesson.
Wow. So what was the most surprising thing that you discovered during the documentary? Like, what was like, what does that, did that happen? Or I can't believe that, you know, he did that or that happened to him.
You know, one of the most surprising things, he created these James Brown trading stamps. They were called the Black and Brown trading stamps with the attorney from the Black Panthers and Art Powell, who played for the Oakland Raiders. And they kind of established this in the Bay Area. And these were like SNH stamps or greenback stamps in the day, but they had James Brown's face on them. And you could trade them and buy like milk and stuff for your family. It was kind of like, think of cryptocurrency, but in 1969, he was trying to figure out a way to create generational wealth, right? To establish an economy that could support Black business. And I thought that was incredibly
wow
and astounding.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
I can't wait to see that. Okay.
Oh, it's incredible. All four episodes, watch it. You, like I said, you learn about James Brown, but we're looking at Black history unfold in that process.
Yes.
Could you share a particularly impactful moment you experienced while making this film?
Well, you know, I think all of the moments as a filmmaker, particularly in this story, every moment was impactful for me. I mean, I got to sit down and listen to LL Cool J, Bootsy, Jimmy Jam, and Terry Lewis, Questlove, Mick Jagger, and the daughters and son of James Brown, as well as some of his band members. So we were talking about James, but you're also listening to people's experiences. You're listening to, like, Jimmy Jam said something, and I was like, what? We were talking about music samples and how many people sampled James Brown. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he loved Papa Don't Take No Mess. That was one of his favorite songs. And that song they used to create Janet Jackson song. And I was like, what? They're like, yes, that groove is, you know, became, you know, something that they used repeatedly and something that someone else used repeatedly. But that's the way love goes.
That's okay.
James Brown groove. So, you know, I was shocked. I did not know that. That's one of my favorite Janet Jackson songs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's one of her biggest hits of all time, but it was a sample from Papa Don't Take No Mess. So just being able to listen to how other musicians used his music, how other musicians were inspired by him, for me, it was incredibly telling, but it was also just enjoyable to actually listen to hear about other people's experiences and their inspiration and how they created music, right? Or how they created a life for themselves.
Wow.
So I'm inspired by James Brown now. Music, it right. is a lot of music that has been created from James Brown, man. Mm-hmm. Nobody can say, I don't know anybody can say that they don't know who James Brown was.
And even if you don't know who James Brown is, you know the music. You've heard exactly. something from Janet Jackson, something from George Michael, something from Mary J. Blige, something from Sinead O'Connor. I mean, everyone has sampled this music at some point. So you know the music and you've grooved to the music and you love the music.
And you know the dances.
I heard that sampling his music or his dance sound.
You know the dance.
Into that split and
the split.
The stage. He moved across the stage before the moonwalk was ever even thought about.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So how did you approach the task of condensing such a dynamic and complex figure into like a four-part docuseries, which probably totaled maybe 4 hours.
It was like, 4 hours. It was so hard. Making a film and making films and making series is about choices, right? It's really, you know, the editing is such a critical part of the storytelling because you can't include everything. So right. you have to rely on your instincts and your storytelling ability to determine, based on your vision, what do you really want the audience to take away? So that helps you make the decisions on what you keep and what you leave on the cutting room floor.
That was a segue to the next question, huh?
it's hard.
Did you title it, Say It Loud?
The title, we all kind of came up, the whole team came up with it together. Okay. But it was my choice from jump, Say It Loud, because the song obviously is an anthem, but the song is a tenet. It's an edict for all of us to recognize that our voice is so important, right? Like you're using your voice right now. Inspire Her is, it's both of you saying it loud. It's creating a platform so people can be able to push their own narrative and have a place to say what they need to and say it in a safe place and say it loudly. So often as people of color, we self-silence, right? Like we just, we're not saying anything, right? Yeah. But the idea of saying it loud is a reminder that we must say, we must tell our stories and we must say it loud enough so that our ancestors hear us, that we're saying it for all the things that you sacrificed, we are saying it and loud enough for the future generations to know that we were here and what we did and that they can just pick up the baton and keep it moving. So say it loud is incredibly powerful as a tenet.
Yes.
But you also, and one thing that I definitely know is that for some people that are timid or don't know exactly where they are, a lot of times you have to speak on their behalf as well. And I felt like at a time when he created that, that he was saying it loud enough for people that couldn't speak for themselves. Mm.
And we all have that responsibility and that accountability. Sometimes we have to speak for ourselves. Sometimes we have to speak for others. Sometimes we have to recognize that it's our moment, right? Like this is the time that I have to say something. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it's scary. But Zora Neale Hurston said something that's, I'm going to paraphrase it, but essentially if you're silent, you know, they'll kill you and say you enjoyed it.
Exactly.
You have to use your voice to speak up and speak truth to power. But sometimes just speaking truth to the microaggressions you get at work, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to speak up. You just do. And for him, I felt like, you know, during the time frame that he was and the things that were happening to African Americans, he was definitely a person that spoke for our race. And I definitely respected him for that, because a lot of things back in those days, they did put into music.
Mm-hmm. And that was the viral nature, right? That was the TikTok, that was the Instagram, that being able to put it on that vinyl was finite.
And
it could go, right? It could reach a lot of people, and a lot of people could get that message with it being on vinyl.
So what do you hope viewers, well, we just talked about that, what we hope viewers would learn about Say It Loud. Were there any significant challenges you faced in gathering footage and interviews for documentary?
Well, you know, when we started this, the biggest challenge was COVID. That was the biggest challenge, in being able to get people to agree to interview and to set up the proper protocol to keep everyone safe. I think that was the biggest challenge when we began 3 years ago.
Okay. And let's talk about that a little bit, because that speaks to you as the director. How did you maneuver around COVID, because a lot of us couldn't.
you know, we had COVID officers and safety protocols and huge guidelines to ensure that our crew was safe, as well as the people that we were interviewing. And even now when I'm shooting, I stay mask on, period. Mm-hmm. That's just who I am in terms of I like to wear my mask. But that was the biggest thing, ensuring that, you know, and making sure that we took the test every day, all of the things, you know, making sure the results were all negative before anybody was allowed on set. It was just, it's as a director, as a leader, it's our responsibility to keep our teams informed and safe.
Wow. This is a big question, but how was the support from his family?
Oh my God, his daughters were amazing. Deanna and Yama are in the docuseries, but they were we created a relationship in a space where they could be honest, they could be comfortable, and they can tell their story in their own voices and not have it chopped and twisted. So that they were supportive. They also allowed me to have some never before seen photos.
Okay.
And so that just being able to have something that no other filmmaker had, you know, really, I was so thrilled and just so honored to be able to possess, especially these really specific photos from Okinawa, Japan. I just cherish wow. being able to use those. Yep.
Wow. How did, as far as the music, how did James Brown's music and message influence the direction and tone of the film? Did you cover everything under around the Black, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, or?
From 55 to 2006, his music is in this docuseries, because everything you want to know about James and everything Mr. Brown wants you to know about him, he put it on the vinyl. It's if you listen, and that's what I think is unique about this docuseries, there's so much music in there, but there's so much of James Brown narrating and talking and really articulating his position and his POV on things. And his music tells you where he was POV wise at any point in time, whether he's talking about taxes, whether he's talking about a girlfriend, whether he's talking about the war, whether he's talking about America's my home, whether he's talking about open up the door and I'll get it myself, all of the things, he's telling you his position on life, and he's telling you how he's making his moves and how he's navigating being Black in America. It's all on the vinyl, which was exceptional, actually.
Wow. His kids own his rights to his music, correct? Or who owns his rights to his music?
It has a couple of different places. Okay. Where Universal Music Group and Primary Wave. It's a lot of different rights holders, because he was with a lot of different record labels over the course of 50 years.
So you guys had to get permission to use the music from all those different...
Well, we used primarily Universal because they had the biggest catalog and they were one of the producers. So
okay, yeah, okay.
That made it very easy.
Made it pretty easy.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking back on the project. Is there anything you wish you could have included or explored further in the documentary?
You know, I think as a writer and director, there's always something. I think I would have loved to have explored a little bit more his time during the Vietnam War, and when he went there. And there doesn't seem to be any found footage of that performance. So I would love to have been able to be the one to find it. Yes, there were plenty of photos, but there was not footage of it. So. Yeah.
Do you think that that could possibly be another documentary at a later time?
I think there's always room for a James Brown documentary.
Yeah.
He has the biggest life of anyone. You know, this is a huge life, and you can't, 4 episodes was a lot. It's the most that's been devoted to him. Mm-hmm. You can go 4 more and there's still more to tell, you know?
Right. That was great that A&E did that, picked that up.
Oh my gosh, it's great for us, not because it's Black History Month, but because his life is American history, and he is someone who literally achieved the American dream with just a 7th grade education. He wow. showed us what was possible, right?
Definitely.
Now I want to ask a question about you, because I saw your sorority, the AKAs. How proud are they that they have this renowned director that is doing big things like this type of documentary?
Well, you know, I'm so grateful and fortunate that we have a sorority filled with amazing filmmakers, you know, and great storytellers, from Courtney Kemp to Ava DuVernay. I think we're very fortunate. We have a lot of voices, but I'm honored to have the distinction of actually doing the first documentary on any of the Divine Nine that aired on Comcast, Black Experience. So 20 Pearls, to be able to write that and direct that about my own sorority was just quite the honor. And to be able to sit down and interview Madam Vice President Kamala Harris for that documentary was just a game changer. And when it aired, I was so excited. And then the next level came, because it was picked up to be shown in Delta on the plane. So I'm flying and I get to watch at 30,000 feet in the air on Delta in-flight entertainment. So for me, that was just personal, a goal, right? To be able to see something I directed literally on a plane when I'm flying from New York to LA. I was just like, yes, this is everything.
Yeah. And you're smiling from ear to ear and the people sitting beside you just looking like, whoa.
Oh no, I told them.
Oh, you told them?
I was like, that's fine.
Yes, what about how your confidence? Time in your career or in this documentary that you doubted yourself for any moment? Like,
always. I mean, you know, because you're making these choices, you've got 4 hours and you have to make choices, and you believe that you're making the right choice, of course, but then you're like, did I make the right choice? Oh my mm-hmm. God, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's done. Is you know what you're always, you know, I believe that as storytellers, we know what we want to convey, but you are never 100% confident that an audience is going to extract from it what you want them to extract, or they're going to feel the deep passion that you feel for it. So,
right. But it probably comes through and exude in your work, the passion that you have for it. I'm sure we'll be able to pick that up once we watch it.
I believe you'll feel the connection to the material. I believe you'll feel that, that it was something that I wanted in my soul to convey, mm-hmm. And that you will know without question that the writer and director was Black, period.
Wow.
So you're gonna feel my Blackness in this work, no question.
Wow.
I can't wait to see this. I'm just excited just simply because, you know, a lot of times we turn on the TV and we're seeing more and more African-Americans in Hollywood, in wherever, on TV. But a lot of times behind the scenes, we don't get to see a lot of who's behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to see that a little bit more now. But I just want to say, as far as a docuseries, something that I consider is real life, people bringing other lives forward and having us understand what was behind the scenes. That's a lot.
Yeah. It is. Because you're talking about somebody's life.
Right. That's what I'm saying, feeling like the family is okay with it. You got to have a happy medium between mm-hmm. entertainment and making sure that the family is okay. So kudos to you for being able to do that.
Well, you know, as storytellers, as people, right, our job is not to harm other people. Exactly. When we go into someone's life, when you're interviewing someone, when you're telling a story about someone, you're going to lay out the facts and you're going to show the ups and the downs, the joys and the sorrows. But your job is not to create additional or incremental trauma by the work that you do. Your job is to help paint a picture and be authentic and be real. But you should never intentionally inflict harm in your work. Whether you're a storyteller or a bricklayer, it doesn't matter. You have to be kind, because we're dealing with humanity. And the kinder we are as people, the better the world will be. There's no room for just not unkind, right? It's just
right.
It's no good.
Tell the world that right now.
Yeah. There's no room. I mean, we're human kind, right? So the be human and be kind is pretty mm-hmm. simple. It's not that complicated.
Yeah, humankind, yeah. Humankind. But can you do me a favor?
Yes.
Can you turn around, grab that Emmy, and let us see it up close and tell us how you felt when you were announced? Wow, that is an Emmy feed.
That is an Emmy, wow. Yes.
Oh my goodness. How was that experience?
Well, you know, it's a regional Emmy for a show that I did. Let me tell you, anytime, whether it's the NAACP Image Awards or the Emmys, when someone calls your name, although I was super dope and excited about this and had to make sure my dress was real nice. But it's what it is the feeling of the work that you put in and what you created has been understood and acknowledged by your peers.
Mm.
That, someone understands you as a, for me, as a storyteller, and they respected and recognized the work and they recognized my voice, right? And that, that for me is really important. And I'm looking forward to more hardware soon.
What type of social life do you have? Because it seems like you're just busy working. How do you take time for yourself?
I've been married almost 24 years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, yes.
Like social life, that is my social life. Exactly. He understands by now.
but you know what? Like, here's the thing. Every time we go to a film festival, for me, that's social. So if I'm in New York, I'm in LA, I always add a couple days to wherever mm-hmm. I am, because I like to just hang out. And so go to a restaurant, go shopping. So social is incredibly important to me because I work a lot and I work hard. But, you know, you can always find me at a beach somewhere. That's just how I like to get down.
Me too.
You know, I love going to the beach. So that's for me very relaxing, and I'm going next month, so I'm excited about that.
Moving. And what's the next project?
I can't tell, but I'll come back to the show and let you know.
Please do.
Please do.
We have an open invitation to come.
Okay, thank you.
Please do.
You know, listen, we appreciate you coming on here with us, and we knew that you gave us just a little bit of your time, and you have other things to go and do. So we definitely appreciate you, man. I'm up here. I know I was looking down to make sure that I'm asking the right questions.
Oh, it's good.
I'm smiling from ear to ear.
Me too.
Tell everyone to follow my company, Coffee Bluff Pictures, on Facebook and on Instagram. That is what you can do for me to build support for a Black woman-owned production company that's making content for everyone. So Coffee Bluff Pictures.
Okay.
And we need to talk off camera, huh?
Yeah.
We're going to show you a trailer. We're going to have it on our page.
Oh,
so everybody who's looking, who is paying attention now, we're going to be, this is recording. We're going to be playing this on Tuesday on our normal day, but we will have the trailer playing prior to us going live. So let everybody know what kind of documentary you put out there, because I've seen some others that talk about him, but this one is far, far more better than any of the other ones that I've seen. So
I'm sorry, you say Coffee Bluff?
Coffee Bluff Pictures. Okay. Coffee BULLFF. And I, yes.
Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners before we let you go?
No, I think that is it. I thank you so much, and I appreciate seeing your beautiful faces and for you giving me the opportunity to spend the evening, a little bit of the evening with you guys. So take care, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.